I'm Mark Sullinger, producer and one of the hosts of The Moth Podcast. For nearly two decades, The Moth has brought live storytelling to stages around the world and to millions of listeners. These are real people telling true stories from their lives. Stories about a lost family recipe, about working to free a wrongfully convicted man, about realizing you need to leave your May-December romance. Stories that will move you, surprise you, make you laugh. Stories you can't forget. Join us. Follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment.
I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And in the final segment, I cannot wait, bombshell reporting from Pablo Torre about Kawhi Leonard and possible endorsement deals, some shady dealings that we're going to get to in that last segment. I've been cracking up about all morning. Stick around for that. But first, we're going to wrap up our conversation about what does Rob Pelinka believe in? If you didn't get a chance, last week we recorded a pod that was part one to this, where I guess where I want to start, D, is a lot of that conversation, from my perspective, was setting the stage about the environment and context in which Rob operates. And one of the points that I was making was that I think a big part of Rob's job is to sort of execute on the agreed upon vision of the group collectively, that there are a lot of voices that contribute to what direction the Lakers go in, the most powerful of which that I think Rob serves are the owner and Janie, and or at least up until the Walter purchase, and then the most powerful player who'd been LeBron and Clutch and all of them. And while that is important context, I don't want to make it sound like Rob is just some helpless, powerless, yes, I'll just do whatever other people ask me. I think there's a great deal of space within that to execute on his vision and pursue players that he wants and the type of team that he wants. And that's going to be extremely important as we go forward over this next year or two in terms of what type of team the Lakers build out. And so when we talk about what does Rob believe in, we set up all of the context going in, but I really want to drill down on the answer to that question from a player perspective and a roster construction standpoint. The first thing that I think of, D, is optionality is a big buzzword that they care about a lot, right? This idea that we can go in this direction, that direction, we can make a big trade, a small trade, somewhere in between. I agree that that's super important. Whenever Rob talks about team building, he makes sure to bring up the aprons and how it's important to not get caught up in that, which I think is very much true. But one of the things about optionality is it's great, D, but at some point you got to choose an option, right? And the Lakers have been sort of this transient team over the last couple of years where the roster's changed a decent amount. And so, yeah, I kick that idea to you, D. What do you think that Rob believes in?
Well, I think that I said this at the start of that pod that we recorded last week, but I think Rob's background as an agent informs his view on players. And it's interesting to me, basketball philosophy can drive your player archetype desires in a bunch of different directions. The Lakers, for example, were a triangle team for many, many years under Phil Jackson. They played the triangle for so long, I could tell you what players I wanted for the Lakers based off of how I thought they would fit into the system that the Lakers were playing, whether it's a bigger guard or an outside shooter or a floor spacing, switchable power forward. There was a definite type of guy that you would want that sort of pathway for every different type of position. I think was key in the Lakers not only winning their first three championships, but the latter two that they won after Phil's return. That's a skill type pathway.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's built on like this framework that's already established in the triangle, right?
Yes. So I lay that as a foundation for this idea, because I think in getting back to Rob and his roots as an agent, I think Rob is mostly attracted to the types of players that would typically make a lot of money.
Talent. Yeah, raw talent.
Mm-hmm. So it's raw talent. And I also think that it's about offensive ability and shot creation and shooting.
Mm-hmm.
I think that historically, what the Lakers have done under Rob is seek out name brand players who fill a certain skill set need within the context of the team. And so I will look directly at the 2020 team as a perfect example of this. That was a pivot team. They were chasing a third star the entire time. We'll talk about this a little bit in the third segment of the pod, but they were chasing Kawhi Leonard to be the third star after the Lakers had already traded for Anthony Davis, and this was after LeBron had already played his first year with the team. Remember, Pete, the background for this as well was that they had signed KCP, who was basically let go by the Pistons after his qualifying offer was rescinded, and Rob called him mana from heaven because he was literally a former lottery pick who was supposed to sign a pretty big contract with the Pistons, but was suddenly a free agent. And the Lakers had enough cap space to be like, we're going to throw you a pretty big bag. And I think that that was the year before this idea, but I think that it's symbolic within this bigger conversation.
And then Rob spent the next season sitting next to Rich Paul watching Laker games. And, you know, we land LeBron the following year, AD the following year. So, yeah, I think that you always basing this in Rob's agent background is super important context.
And so in getting back to this idea of brand value, I think that this goes into the second draft idea that we've talked about with let's go after former lottery picks who maybe didn't work out, or mid first round picks, guys with a pedigree, guys with talent. I believe in a lot of this stuff myself, so I'm not knocking Rob for this being a part of his view on players. But the 2020 team, Pete, think about who they went after. After they didn't get Kawhi, they signed Danny Green, who was the biggest example of name brand 3-and-D role player. Go to the 3-and-D wing store and get me the best available one that's on the market right now. And Danny Green was a free agent and they got him. It was Rajon Rondo. It was at first DeMarcus Cousins. And then after it was DeMarcus Cousins, it was Dwight Howard.
Both brand name fives, even if they were vet minimum guys at that point. These are star players, at least at one point.
And then it was Avery Bradley, another former ball pressure. What is this thing that you were known for and the talent to back it up? This isn't to say that it's all sizzle, no substance. He's done a good job, I think, of finding players who straddle that line between name brand value and on-court value. At least the team that won the title.
Sorry, Darius is seeing my face that I'm making right now. I don't entirely agree, but yeah.
No, I think that it's fair to question because there have certainly been misses within this idea as well, right? So I don't want to make it seem like, oh, the hit rate is 100% or even close. But I do think that this idea of the name brand within what you actually do on the court and being sort of famous in your role.
Yeah.
People talk about being a star in your role. That means a certain amount of executing.
Sure.
I'm talking about being famous in your role. And that's where I think the agent stuff backs that up. I don't know if I'm being too ungenerous here in this because I don't mean it totally as a pejorative, but I do think it can be viewed that way if you go too far in that direction.
The Lakers have always drifted into starfuckery at their worst, and Pelinka has that weakness as well, right? And that's when you look at the worst team of these last few years, the 21-22 team.
Yes.
It was all over that roster. And I want to bring up that roster 2D because one thing, we always look at that era as the Russ trade being the landmark event. And I agree that that's true. But the secondary thing that I think was very important that I thought they executed so poorly, of which the Russ trade was context, but not the entire thing, was the shift of AD to the five. And so that's another thing that I think Rob believes in. I think Rob believes in a level of conventional wisdom. Like, there's a reason why the league is spacing out to five out, getting a certain number of three-point attempts, and we want to sort of match that, right? But to your point about the brand name recognition, I think that's absolutely the case, and even true of defensive players too. Like, Pat Bev, what was he if not a brand name defensive player, right? The Trevor Ariza, he was old as hell if you hadn't watched him in 3 years, but he was kind of that quintessential 3-and-D small forward once upon a time, right? That turned into a power forward later on, D. And so, yeah, I think you're spot on with this.
All the signings that year had a certain amount of cachet It was Carmelo Anthony. Even the swap out of Alex Caruso in favor of Kendrick Nunn. We could look at that through the framework of clutch and clutch influence. And I think that there was plenty of that there. Don't get me wrong. But Kendrick Nunn was also this sexy scoring guard mm-hmm. who had ball handling ability. It was a guy who, like, we can extract real value here. He's only going to make $5 million, but he can score like this. And he's got this sort of skill set. And there is fetishization might be too strong of a word, but it's like, I want scoring. I want shot creation. I want offensive ability yeah. as the main drivers for talent evaluation. Yeah. And I think AD shift to the five is a piece of that larger idea of like conventional thinking and conventional wisdom, but also optimizing what you're going to do offensively, mm-hmm. not as much like, oh, well, AD would thrive at defensively, actually, was as a roamer, as a uh-huh. weak side player. Like, yes, he could play in the middle of the frame, and he was great at that. But some of the Lakers' best defensive units were actually with AD at the four. Mm-hmm. Everyone scaling down and them just being massive, where mm-hmm. you've got a shot blocker at the rim, and you've got AD acting as this condor on the weak side who was, like, disrupting skip passes and uh-huh. then being the weak side rotator after the big was already showing like in strong side zone looks. There was all of this other stuff that's not what we want to do on offense. We right. want AD to space the floor. We want him to do this. The jump shooting from the bubble. This is the whole idea of AD shifting to the five. I would argue, Pete, the idea of really chasing offense and spacing and shooting and name brand, that even happened in the year after they won the championship. It was, let's go get Marc Gasol. Let's sign Montrezl Harrell, who was just sixth man of the year. It was a lot of, oh, the glitz, the glamour, like the Los Angeles Lakers. And to me, that's agent stuff at sure. its core, right? It doesn't mean you don't know basketball, but it is a little bit of like, how can I sell you on something? And it's just like, oh, well, the way that you sell things a lot of times is that first impression of what's the name value yep. around it. And so let's go to break here, Pete. When we come back, we'll keep it going.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I want to pull on the thread a little bit more about viewing the team through an offensive lens versus a defensive one, because I think this is all tied together. But I do think that was the fundamental transition the Lakers went through when moving AD to the five, that it was very much built through we want to space the floor. This is what we're concerned about on offense. And then to your point about brand names, I think that exists on the defensive end, where I think a lot of the thought process was, well, we have Anthony Davis in the middle, and he's one of, if not the best defensive player on the planet. And so we can overload in these other categories to sort of correct, I'm using quote fingers, mm-hmm. the issues that we have on the offensive end that are also driven by star wishes, right? From the perspective of they wanted more creation, more usage. They wanted a guard that could help them out and help carry the load, right? But, and so that underlies this a little bit deep, but it's not bad to have all of this offensive talent by any means, but there's been this warping of really too much of the team has been built around what can they be on offense. And then these two players, we've got Vando to guard the ball. We've got AD to guard the rim, where what we see really throughout NBA history, including that 2020 team you were just speaking on, is there is a collective force defensively that you can't achieve through just a couple of specialists or brand name defenders that really, I don't have so much of an issue with the pursuit of offensive talent. I think he over-indexes and cares too much about ball handling, specifically the ability to dribble and sort of create your shot off the dribble. I think that has improved over the last few years in 21, 22. I thought the roster was just they had way too many guys like that. And it culminated to me with the drafting of JHS, where it was like, we got like six other dudes in front of him that you would give the ball to. How is this kid ever going to play, even if he could really play, right? And so I think they've sort of corrected that a little bit, but a little while back, we were talking about ball pressure guys and how every team in the top six around the league had at least two guys in the starting lineup that were good to great at that. And we really only had one guy on the team of that. And so for me, it's more of the absence of a defensive philosophy and view. It seems to be that what do you think Pelinka's view of the defensive end of the court is?
This is an area where it's less clear to me about what he actually believes in from a player acquisition standpoint. I would argue that this is the part of player evaluation where he's mostly leaned on his coaches in order to optimize the defensive talent that's available to them. And the coaches to say, no, build something out to account for what these guys do, rather than him saying, well, we believe in these ideas defensively from a player standpoint.
So do you think the overall kind of philosophy is, I'm going to try to get the most talented guys that we can get, and it's your job to make something out of this on the defensive end?
Yes, I do. And I think that if Rob had his druthers, he would get all two-way players who showed a certain amount of ability on both sides of the ball, right? That's what everyone would do, right? But I think that time after time after time, the where we can win on the margins in terms of getting the most bang for our buck has been on the offensive side of the ball. Every value signing the team has made has mostly been about, well, this guy can outperform his contract offensively rather than defensively. Alex Caruso was the prime example of this. When the Lakers decided they weren't going to match or pay even close to what the Bulls were going to offer Alex Caruso, which was not a lot of money. It was like $8 million. And by if I recall reporting correctly, Caruso would have stayed for even less than that. I think he would have stayed for $6 or $7 million a season if it was a year's commitment that came with that, right? But Alex Caruso was never going to outperform his contract from an offensive side of the ball. He was going to outperform it on the defensive side of the ball. And what do you value there? Oh, well, no, I think where the value lies is he does exactly what you're paying him to do, which is heat up the damn ball and just be like a terror out there. But he's only going to do it for probably 20, 22 minutes a game. Some nights you'll stretch him out, but whatever, right? Mm-hmm. That's not really my point. You look at a player like Kendrick Nunn. Oh, well, we can get Kendrick Nunn for $5 million. Well, he's capable of scoring double-digit points a game every night. We can get double the value out of Kendrick Nunn. Ugh. In theory, that's what you're going because of how important scoring can be. And so I've tended to look at Rob through the lens of when he's trying to win on the margins, Pete, in terms of like getting the extracting the most value from a contract, he's mostly doing that on the offensive side of the ball and not on the defensive side.
And even then, and we are, you know, several layers, we don't know exactly Rob's thoughts on Caruso specifically, right?
This is my perception based off of what's happening.
And I'm going to do that as well, right? Because I think you're correct in that perception. But I'd argue guys like Alex, even if they're not putting up points, they have a ton of offensive value because they understand how to cut, screen, how to make the whole thing grease the wheels. And that's always been a huge part of Laker championship teams, these connective players, Rick Fox, Robert Horry, Derek Fisher. These are guys that were not, a lot of times, not averaging double digits in terms of points, but they helped the offense function because they knew exactly how to play. Remember the great chemistry that LeBron and Caruso used to have because they would make the same read, a split second ahead of everybody else type of thing. I worry about that being a blind spot for Rob, right? That if you can't see it on the stat sheet, if it can't be something that you walk into a room as an agent and say, well, my guy's averaging 15 a game on 47% from the field. He's a 38% three-point shooter. If the value isn't shown in those respects, that he doesn't see it much at all.
I would say, too, that if your calling card from Alex Caruso's standpoint is being like, well, me and LeBron have the best net rating. It's just like, oh, great. Well, me and LeBron have the best net rating. So, like, what are we talking about here? It's freaking LeBron James, right? And so I remember that was a point that Mike would hammer a bunch, and rightly so. He was out there saying, Alex Caruso needs to play.
Yeah.
And he needs to play more because every time he's on the court, the Lakers are winning by 10 points per 100 possessions. This is kind of the whole point of the
damn
game,
right? Don't make this hard on yourself. Yeah.
So I agree with you that this is why, if you ask me what Rob believes in, I'm going to tell you, I think he believes in getting the most talented player. And to me, basketball, the stars of the league, Pete,
the way you make your name as a player and the way that talent is justified and explained is almost always about what you do on offense. We don't talk about a player's defensive bag.
Sure.
This isn't the thing that is out there actively. Like, we might love that stuff. And when you talk about Caruso and the value of cutting and screening and relocating and being the connecting piece, yeah, that's me and you really loving and appreciating how much value those guys have. But stat sheet stuff is what gets you paid. It's why Cam Thomas is out here in restricted free agency. Like, no, I am average what these dudes who make $30 million a year average, right? He's just like, go look at Tyler Hero. What's the difference between him and me? Give me that much money. This is a mindset that perpetuates the entire league. It's not just Rob Pelinka.
For sure. But while you don't talk about a player's defensive bag or anything like that, we sure do talk about the defenses of teams that actually win championships. And this is where the distinction, you're not an agent. It's not that, and I'm not saying that that's how Rob necessarily, I do think that informs where he comes from, but that obviously he knows the job that he has. But that is important, right? You can't just build a team off of the acquisition of that offensive talent. So I want to talk about this in a future tense type of, if this is what we think of how Pelinka views the world and views team building and all of that. And we're starting from a place of Luka and Austin. That's at least how they talk in terms of pillars and cornerstones. Can you build a championship team going forward of just being like, I'm going to get the most talented guy here and the most talented guy there? There has to be, in my opinion, a level of stylistic coherence. You were talking about triangle type of players earlier, and you knew which guys sort of played that type of game that could fit into that and which guys didn't. I don't think you can just go to the grocery store and just buy the most expensive ingredients that you can get or the best ingredients that you could get and necessarily make a coherent meal out of it, right? And so is there a way to have this philosophy but actually apply it to something? Can Rob just go out there and acquire the best players, or does this have to fit a bigger idea?
Well, I think that there's a threshold and a line that if you clear it, I think you can. It's like when you got LeBron, who's still at like the peak of his powers back in 2018, 2019, and 2020, right? Like, and then you trade for 26 or 27-year-old Anthony Davis. It's just like you clear the talent bar at such a degree that building around those guys, I do think that, I don't want to call it lucking in to it, but I think that the alchemy revealed itself rather than Rob actively poaching players and being like, this is how the alchemy is going to go. You know what I mean?
I do, but it revealed itself when they built that defensive monster, right? It didn't at any other point. They were nowhere close to a championship except for the 21 season, which was also a monster defensive team, number one in the league during the regular season. That's when it revealed itself, right? And then when they changed to 80 at the five, now we got all these guards. We got three forwards on the whole damn team.
Well, this is where I would say that the partner that rarely comes up within these conversations is the head coach. When Frank Vogel was hired, I'm guessing Frank Vogel had something to do with Avery Bradley. I'm guessing Frank Vogel had something to do with, oh, well, if it's a choice between all of these backups after Cousins got hurt, well, can Dwight actually play still?
Yeah, that's a former DPOY multiple times
Dwight
over.
Howard can play. I remember going up against him when I was in Indy.
That's right. Yeah, and I think this is a great point that one of the things I do think Pelinka believes in is getting the players that your coach asks for.
Yes.
Like even a guy like Torian Prince, right, and Christian Wood, these are guys that Darvin was a big believer in those guys, and we want to play a certain way. It's also part of the reason why you got to have a certain level of I can identify the right coach for the team, because if you're going to – in the whole, like, Rob often is serving the desires and wishes of other people, this is a key figure within this that I hadn't brought up. It's not just – you know, LeBron or Luka and Genie, the coach is a big part of this.
No, and this is why it's just like, what does JJ Redick believe in? And I think we got some answers to that last season, but JJ's also a guy that is telling you, well, my job is to coach the players that I have. And what you just said is Rob can maybe sometimes be like, well, what players does the coach want? Mm-hmm. Right. And so if you've got a head coach who is just like, well, get me the best players that you can and I'll make it work, then I think it'll be interesting to see. I think that they have a good partnership and that they know how to work together, but I think JJ's influence is going to start to reveal itself more and more over the next like transaction cycles, right? Like we've had one summer of it now, but I think as we go into two summers and three summers and two trade deadlines and three trade deadlines, we'll get a better picture of how all of these ideas come together. Let's go to break here, Pete, and we'll wrap this part of the conversation and move on to the fun part.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons one and two, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Brian Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays. And now we are diving into season three.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
So the last thing I'll say about JJ Pete is that I think that JJ and Rob were similar archetypes of players from when mm-hmm. they had playing careers. Mm-hmm. When you talk about Rob sort of following conventional wisdom, I think that's also a part of like the agent idea. It's just like as the game changes, you adapt as an agent and you're just like, well, what's in vogue now is this. And so I'm going to like start to go in this direction as well. Like I know talent is talent, but as the game sure. changes, you're always seeking out the most talented players who thrive within the context of the new version of the game that's being played.
I guess I want the Lakers leaders to be on the cutting edge of that rather than reactive and following whatever. Oh, this is what everyone else is doing. Okay, we should do that too.
Well, this is where I'll be interested to see like how JJ influences things as well. JJ is a self-proclaimed sicko. He cares about where the game is. I think he cares about where the game is going. As a player, we've talked about this before. He was someone who wanted to shoot a ton of threes, but was not averse to pulling up into a 18-foot midi because he got ran off the line. I think that he's open to more styles of playing basketball while still having a clear philosophy on what he's going to value as a player. I'll be interested to see where those limitations are and where his, no, I'm not crossing that line, is because every coach has a stopping point where they're just like, nope, mm-hmm. that's a bridge too far and I'm going to stick to what I do here. And some coaches will go down with the ship because sure. they're just like, this is what I believe in. We saw that with Frank. He was just like, no, guess what? Carmelo going to be in a drop coverage today.
And, this is what I do. Like,
wait, what are we talking about here? Yeah. But, you know, at some point you're like, this is what I do, and I'm going to continue to do it.
And I think that at this point in Redick's career as a coach, he's still establishing this is what I believe in and this is what I do. So I do think that the marriage between what Rob believes in and what JJ believes in is going to be a huge part of what the vision around this version of the team looks like. Before we wrap up the Kawhi story, I woke up very early this morning and it broke super early. Pablo Torre, if you haven't heard what's going on with this, did some incredible reporting. Apparently it was a 7-month investigation he did, has thousands of pages of receipts on this, talked to multiple former employees and pertinent individuals. The 60-second version of the story, please fill in the blanks where you can, D, is basically this. There's this company called Aspiration, led by these two guys, that it was a tree planting service and it was based on like zero carbon emissions yep. on like big scale type of stuff. So big scale projects. And they have all of these big name investors. They have a commercial they do with Robert Downey Jr. acting in it and doing the voiceover on it. I believe he was one of the investors as well. Drake was an investor, Leonardo DiCaprio. They've got all of these names, right? And they raise like $800 million for this project. And turns out one of the guys gets convicted, pleads guilty to defrauding two people of like, or two funds of like $145 million, of which all of this starts to kind of come out. So you're wondering, what does Kawhi Leonard or the Clippers or anything have to do with this? In the bankruptcy filing that this guy who's been convicted of these financial crimes, there was a listing of the unsecured creditors that they were still owed money to, of which Steve Ballmer and, you know, the Clippers and these different companies kind of in that constellation were owed money. But one of them was this company called KL2 Aspire LLC, which cracks me up. Based out of Moreno Valley, it's like very obviously Kauai's thing. And then he looks up the filings. It does belong to Kauai, right? And they're paying Kauai $7 million a year for 4 years, so $28 million in total, to be a spokesperson for them. So he's not an investor like those other names that I mentioned. They're actually paying him to be a spokesperson. The problem is he's never been a spokesperson for this. And apparently, according to former employees, it's an open secret that the whole purpose of this contract, D, is to circumvent the NBA salary cap. So I want to make it clear that these are all allegations, that none of this has been adjudicated, D, but a bombshell of a story, D, that would, I believe, end up carrying some really massive consequences if it's investigated and found to be true by the NBA. What's your reaction to all this? Because I've been cackling all morning.
Well, it's very funny. The whole idea of Kauai being a spokesperson for anything, never talks publicly about pretty much anything, especially in endorsing products. One of the funny things that was brought up on the podcast, which you should go listen to.
It's so good. Yes. Get yourself a big old tub of popcorn and yes.
And just listen to it. Take your dog for a walk or just take a walk by yourself and just throw the pod on. Pablo was talking about how in many of Kauai's actual endorsement deals, New Balance, he's in commercials, but he never talks. Mm-hmm. The idea of him being a spokesperson is just funny to me. The paperwork that they were reading through on the podcast that detailed the terms of his deal was super interesting because he has like veto rights in like all of these areas where in theory, they could ask him like, hey, I'd like you to retweet this, or I'd like you to make an appearance here. And he had veto rights over all of that stuff based off of like personal beliefs. And it was just funny that like they could ask him to do anything and he could essentially say no and he would still get paid.
Well, so, and he's never actually advertised for this company.
Yes. The funny thing was like Pablo is part of the investigation was just like he was looking for any retweets, any public statements, any like commercials, any ads, anything. And he's like, I couldn't find anything. And so there's literally nothing out there. This will be super interesting to Lakers fans. And just, I want to like pull the curtain back and why it's funny, but why it's also just like, oh, this is like, is this actually the bombshell? Because it looks like it could be, is that I remember Pete, and this goes back to our conversation about Rob, is that Kauai was the target in the summer of 2019. LeBron had signed the summer earlier. And they had just traded for Anthony Davis, and they were hoarding their cap space in order to have enough to sign one more max player. And it was well known that it was going to be Kauai. And it was well known it was going to be a fight between the Lakers and the Clippers. And there was a story out at the time, and there were all of these internet rumors about like ways that the Clippers, who ended up with Kauai, had sort of tried to convince him to do things, right? And to circumvent the cap. There was actually a story at the time that came out a little bit after that the Lakers were sort of put off by some of the extracurricular asks mm-hmm. that were coming out of Kauai's camp. You worked for the team a little bit after this time. We've had conversations with people in and around the organization. The idea of like tampering or going against the rules for the Lakers at this specific time, the alerts were like at an all-time high related to any of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The Lakers were very conscientious because remember Magic had gone on TV that one time and then the team had gotten fined and they're asking about stuff.
For something that Pelinka did, right? It was communications with Paul George's agent or something. It was something around Paul George, but the Lakers had just gotten fined and dinked for this. So this is a great point in that stuff like this was a very sensitive topic at that point for the Lakers.
And they did not want to be perceived in any way, shape, or form as like being outside of the rules or anything like that. I remember even with us, we were just like, when we were working mm-hmm. for the team, me in a more of an ancillary way, but working for the team. And even we had our concerns about, well, we're not even going to do real free agency pods.
Yeah, no, if you listen to this podcast, it was a totally different, like, we would talk about, this downhill guard. Use your imagination, listeners. God, that's so nice to not have to do that. But yes, that's how sensitive it was. Is it down to turkeys like us? We couldn't be like, Lakers should sign this guy, right? Yeah.
Even we felt like, well, no, we're going to err on the side of caution.
Yeah.
And we're going to be a certain way with this. And so I remember at the time of there being rumors about, well, did the Clippers do X and did the Clippers do Y? We should point out that this breaking story, this developing story, isn't about that summer. It's not about his initial signing with the team. It's about his second contract with the team and started in 2022.
Uh-huh.
That's why the documents show $7 million still unpaid, because he's already received, seemingly, 21 of the $28 million that he was supposed to receive. And it's so interesting the way that the story developed, which was Pablo basically just going through the bankruptcy filings, because it's related to people who he was familiar with through the fact that they also went to Harvard. Pablo went to Harvard as well. And so it was more about the interesting nature of, like, these dudes who, one of them worked for Bill Clinton. They wanted to, like, work in government. Some of that stuff fell through. They started this company where they're just like, well, we're going to plant a tree. But the story that Pablo was telling about how the money that they were getting from investors and, like, the money that they were charging to plant the trees was, like, more than what it actually cost. And so it was just seemingly shady all around. And in the kernels of information that he's pulling from this, it's just like, wait, what is Steve Ballmer? Why is he one of the major investors in this, in terms of putting backing this company with money? And wait, who is this KL2 LLC that still owed $7 million, which was way more money owed than any of the other entities that were still owed money? And it turns out, wait, so you're telling me that an LLC in Kawhi Leonard's name is still owed $7 million. When you dig into the contract paperwork, it was for $28 million. And one of the major backers who's feeding money into the company, Aspire, is Steve Ballmer. So you're telling me Steve Ballmer's putting tens of millions of dollars into this company, and on the other end, you've got Kawhi Leonard
getting paid for it?
Who is essentially getting paid as part of, like, what Pablo Torre is framing as a no-show contract, which we'd all love a no-show contract, Pete. How about we make money off a pod that we never record? That sounds fantastic to me, right? Anyways.
Bro, I wish we had more time. I want to talk about this on the next pod a little bit more too. But the thing that made me laugh the most is the fucking name of the LLC. The KL2 Aspire LLC. Because it's like, very obviously, the KL2, right? It's like, if you and I decided that we were going to go into some shady business and we decided to name it, like, Pete and Darius decide to do financial crimes LLC, because it names him, it names where we're getting the money from. Oh, I was just howling at this whole
thing. The fact that it's KL2 Aspire.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like,
we created this thing specifically
so you could pay us this type of thing, allegedly. Right. So
allegedly, it's all alleged.
But this has big implications, dude. We don't have time to talk about it now, but I do want to talk about it on the next pod. This is a big violation.
This would be really bad. And again, remember even how the Clippers got Kawhi. They were sending Lawrence Frank and Clippers representatives to every Toronto game all during the season that Kawhi played for the Raptors and won the championship with the Raptors. If you look at a game, oh, look, the Raptors are playing the Milwaukee Bucks in Milwaukee. Why is Lawrence Frank in the 10th row center court, right? And it's like a Grateful Dead head who's following the dead around, but instead it's just like Lawrence Frank was a Kawhi Leonard head, and he's just following Kawhi from city to city to city, making his impression known. That's just like, you talked about Rob having conversations with Rich Paul after the KCP signing every day. Well, Lawrence Frank was just like, I'm going to start recruiting you a little bit early, my guy. And so there were all of these implications about, are the Clippers doing everything within the rules? So I'm very interested to see where this goes. Pablo, a fellow Filipino, so shout out to Pablo Torre. Shout out to him. Great investigative work from him. And again, go listen to the pod yourself. I'm like 3/4 of the way through. We stopped to start to record the pod, but it's been great. And for early September, Pete, this is definitely going to be a story that seemingly has staying power because we're in the dead of it right now. Sure. There is like no basketball news. And so this is going to carry the day for a little while for sure.
No, I definitely want to talk about it more because I think there's several aspects to this that are going to have implications just for the whole league going forward. So, all right, going to wrap up here. This has been fun. We'll be back either tomorrow or on Friday. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Ainge has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's in. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points. 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block. An NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one.
Miss it.
Unbelievable.
It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yes.
And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic. Trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
Allegedly.
I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. It's about interesting family stories and the truth behind them. It's available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.